Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. You are a nation, and I'm glad you're here tonight to join in tonight's Patriot Education broadcast. I was substituting in an 8th grade English class this week. I do that type of thing when I do not have students in my in-school suspension room. And the story that the 8th grade English class had assigned to them to read was remarkably apropos for our current, I guess you could say, both societal and educational mindset, as exhibited by the 51% of this country who re-elected a liberal, progressive Marxist. I sent out a message to the folks at Patriot Family, who, bless their hearts, are the ones who make it possible for me to come to you every Thursday night for an hour and a half here on Patriot Education, with a link to the story. But for those of you who may not have gotten that email and who are just listening in to see what we're going to talk about tonight, I printed out a copy of it, and I would like to read it to you, mainly because I think you will recognize its fitness for the current attitudes of too many Americans. The fundamental misconception that alike and equal mean the same thing. So, without further ado, I would like you to hear a story called Harrison Bergeron. It was written by Kurt Vonnegut, the science fiction author, whose, I guess you could say, style and attitude was never about, gee, we meet a nice, friendly, fuzzy alien and they show us how to cure cancer and everybody hugs everybody and that's the end of the story. Mr. Vonnegut had a fairly dark view of the future and a fairly dark view of human beings. And this story is a bit dark, but it does illustrate what our public education system would see as the perfect world. Harrison Bergeron by Bert Bacon. The year was 2081, and everybody was finally equal. They weren't only equal before God and the law, they were equal every which way. Nobody was smarter than anybody else. Nobody was better looking than anybody else. Nobody was stronger or quicker than anybody else. All this equality was due to the 211th, 212th, and 213th Amendments to the Constitution, and to the unceasing vigilance of agents of the United States Handicapper General. Some things about living still weren't quite right, though. April, for instance, still drove people crazy by not being springtime. And it was in that the HG men took George and Hazel Bergeron's 14-year-old son, Harrison, away. It was tragic, all right, but George and Hazel couldn't think about it very hard. Hazel had a perfectly average intelligence, which meant that she couldn't think about anything except in short bursts. And George, while his intelligence was way above normal, had a little mental handicap radio in his ear. He was required by law to wear it at all times. It was tuned to a government transmitter. Every 20 seconds or so, the transmitter would send out some sharp noise to keep people like George from taking unfair advantage of their brains. George and Hazel were watching television. There were tears on Hazel's cheeks, but she'd forgotten for the moment what they were about. On the television screen were ballerinas. A buzzer sounded in George's head. His thoughts fled in panic like bats from a burglar alarm. "That was a real pretty dance, that dance they just did," said Hazel.
"Huh?"
said George. "That dance. It was nice," said Hazel.
"Yep,"
said George. He tried to think a little about the ballerinas. They weren't really very good, no better than anybody else would have been, anyway. They were burdened with sash weights and bags of birdshot, and their faces were masked so that no one, seeing a free and graceful gesture or a pretty face, would feel like something cat drug him. George was toying with the vague notion that maybe dancers shouldn't be handicapped, but didn't get very far with it before another noise in his ear radio scattered his thoughts. George winced. So did two out of the eight ballerinas. Hazel saw him wince. Having no mental handicap herself, she had to ask George what the latest sound had been.
"Sounded like somebody hitting a milk bottle with a ball-peen hammer," said George.
"I think it would be real interesting hearing all the different sounds," said Hazel, a little envious. "All the things they think up."
Said George.
"Only, if I was Handicapper General, you know what I would do?" said Hazel. Hazel, as a matter of fact, bore a strong resemblance to the Handicapper General, a woman named Diana Moon Glampers. "If I was Diana Moon Glampers," said Hazel, "I'd have chimes on Sunday. Just chimes. Kind of in honor of religion."
"I could think if it was just chimes," said George.
"Well, maybe make them real loud," said Hazel. "I think I'd make a good Handicapper General."
"Good as anybody else," said George.
"Who knows better than I do what normal is?" said Hazel.
"Right,"
said George. He began to think glimmeringly about his abnormal son, who was now in jail, about Harrison, a 21-gun salute, head stopped that. "Boy," said Hazel, "that was a doozy, wasn't it?" It was such a doozy that George was white and trembling, and tears stood on the rims of his red eyes. Two of the eight ballerinas had collapsed to the studio floor and were holding their temples. "All of a sudden, you look so tired," said Hazel. "Why don't you stretch out on the sofa so you can rest your handicap bag on the pillows, honey bunch?" She was referring to the 47 pounds of birdshot in a canvas bag, which was padlocked around George's neck. "Go on and rest the bag for a little while," she said. "I don't care if you're not equal to me for a while." George weighed the bag with his hands.
"I don't mind it," he said. "I don't notice it anymore. It's just a part of me."
"You've been so kind of tired lately, kind of wore out," said Hazel. if there was just some way we could make a little hole in the bottom of the bag and just take out a few of them lead balls. Just a few.
2 years in prison, $1,000 fine for every ball I took out, said George. I don't call that a bargain.
If you could just take a few out when you came home from work, said Hazel. I mean, you don't compete with anybody around here. You just sit around.
If I tried to get away with it, said George, then other people would get away with it, and pretty soon we'd be right back to the Dark Ages again with everybody competing against everybody else. You wouldn't like that, would you?
I'd hate it, said Hazel.
There you are, said George. The minute people start cheating on laws, what do you think happens to society?
If Hazel hadn't been able to come up with an answer to this question, George couldn't have supplied one. A siren was going off in his head. Reckon it'd fall apart, said Hazel.
What would? George said blankly.
Society, said Hazel uncertainly. Wasn't that what you just said?
Who knows, said George.
The television program was suddenly interrupted for a news bulletin. It wasn't clear at first as to what the bulletin was about, since the announcer, like all announcers, had serious speech impediment. For about half a minute, and in a state of high excitement, the announcer tried to say, ladies and gentlemen. He finally gave up and handed the bulletin to a ballerina to read. That's all right, Hazel said of the announcer. He tried. That's the big thing. He tried to do the best he could with what God gave him. He should get a nice raise for trying so hard. Ladies and gentlemen, said the ballerina, reading the bulletin. She must have been extraordinarily beautiful because the mask she wore was hideous. And it was easy to see that she was the strongest and most graceful of all the dancers, for her handicap bags were as big as those worn by 200-pound men. And she had to apologize at once for her voice, which was a very unfair voice for a woman to use. Her voice was a warm, luminous, timeless melody. Excuse me, she said, and she began again, making her voice absolutely uncompetitive. Harrison Bergeron, age 14, she said in a grackle squawk, has just escaped from jail, where he was held on suspicion of plotting to overthrow the government. He is a genius and an athlete, is under handicap, and should be regarded as extremely dangerous. A police photograph of Harrison Bergeron was flashed on the screen, upside down, and then sideways, upside down again, and then right side up. The picture showed the full length of Harrison against a background calibrated in feet and inches. He was exactly 7 feet tall. The rest of Harrison's appearance was Halloween and hardware. Nobody had ever borne heavier handicaps. He had outgrown hindrances faster than the HG men could think them up. Instead of a little ear radio for a mental handicap, he wore a tremendous pair of earphones and spectacles with thick, wavy lenses. The spectacles were intended not only to make him half blind, but give him whanging headaches besides. Scrap metal was hung all over him. Ordinarily, there was a certain symmetry, a military neatness to the handicaps issued to strong people, but Harrison looked like a walking junkyard. In the race of life, Harrison carried 300 pounds. And to offset his good looks, the HG men required that he wear at all times a red rubber ball for a nose, keep his eyebrows shaved off, and cover his even white teeth with black caps at snaggletooth random. If you see this boy, said the ballerina, do not, I repeat, do not try to reason with him. There was the shriek of a door being torn from its hinges. Screams and barking cries of consternation came from the television set. The photograph of Harrison Bergeron on the screen jumped again and again, as though dancing to the tune of an earthquake. George Bergeron correctly identified the earthquake, and well he might have, for many was the time his own home had danced the same crashing tune.
My God, said George, that must be Harrison.
The realization was blasted from his mind instantly by the sound of an automobile collision in his head. When George could open his eyes again, the photograph of Harrison was gone. A living, breathing Harrison filled the screen. Clanking, clownish, and huge, Harrison stood in the center of the studio. The knob of the uprooted studio door was still in his hand. Ballerinas, technicians, musicians, and announcers cowered on their knees before him, expecting to die.
"I am the Emperor," cried Harrison. "Do you hear? I am the Emperor. Everybody must do what I say at once."
He stamped his foot, and the studio shook.
"Even as I stand here," he bellowed, "crippled, hobbled, sickened, I am a greater ruler than any man who ever lived. Now watch me become what I can become."
Harrison tore the straps of his handicap harness like wet tissue paper, tore straps guaranteed to support 5,000 pounds. Harrison's scrap iron handicaps crashed to the floor. Harrison pressed his thumb under the bar of the padlock that secured his head harness. The bar snapped like celery. Harrison smashed his headphones and spectacles against the wall. He flung away his rubble ball nose, reeled a man that would awed Thor, the god of thunder.
"I shall now select my empress," he said, looking down on the cowering people. "Let the first woman who dares rise to her feet claim her mate and her throne."
A moment passed, and then a ballerina arose, swaying like a willow. Harrison plucked the mental handicap from her ear, snapped off her physical handicaps with marvelous delicacy. Last of all, he removed her mask. She was blindingly beautiful.
"Now," said Harrison, taking her hand, "shall we show the people the meaning of the word dance?"
"Music," he commanded. The musicians scrambled back into their chairs, and Harrison stripped them of their handicaps too.
"Play your best," he told them, "and I'll make you barons and dukes and earls."
The music began. It was normal at first, cheap, silly, false. But Harrison snatched two musicians from their chairs, waved them like batons as he sang the music he wanted it played. He slammed them back into their chairs. The music began again and was much improved. Harrison and his empress merely listened to music for a while, listened gravely as though synchronizing their heartbeats with it. They shifted their weights to their toes. Harrison placed his big hands on the girl's tiny waist, letting her sense the weightlessness that would soon be hers. And then, in an explosion of joy and grace, into the air they sprang. Not only the laws of the land abandoned, but the law of gravity and the laws of motion as well. They reeled, whirled, swiveled, flounced, capered, gambled, and spun. They leaped like deer on the moon. The studio ceiling was 30 feet high, but each leap brought the dancers nearer to it. It became their obvious intention to kiss the ceiling. They kissed it. And then, neutralizing gravity with love and pure will, they remained suspended in air, inches below the ceiling, and they kissed each other for a long, long time. It was then that Diana Moon Glampers, Landkeeper General, came into the studio with a double-barreled 10-gauge shotgun. She fired twice, and the Emperor and the Empress were dead before they hit the floor. Diana Moon Glampers loaded the gun again. She aimed it at the musicians and told them they had 10 seconds to get their handicaps back on. It was then that the Bergeron's television tube burned out. Hazel turned to comment about the blackout to George, but George had gone out into the kitchen for a can of beer. George came back in with the beer, paused while a handicap signal shook him up. Then he sat down again.
"You been crying?" he said to Hazel.
"Yup," she said.
"What about?" he said.
"I forget," she said. "Something real sad on television."
"What was it?" he said.
"It's all kind of mixed up in my mind," said Hazel.
"Forget sad things," said George.
"I always do," said Hazel.
"That's my girl," said George.
He winced. there was the sound of a riveting gun in his head.
Gee, I can tell that was a doozy, said Hazel.
You can say that again, said George.
Gee, said Hazel, I could tell that was a doozy.
When this story, ladies and gentlemen, was read aloud to the first 8th grade class for which I substituted, which was a collaborative class in the magic 60-40 percentage of 60% average or above students and 40% special ed, I got a lot of blank looks, and several people said, well, what was the point of the story? I think that series of questions illustrates the point of the story very well. Kurt Vonnegut's story of Harris and Bergeron is intended to be a metaphor for the passion for declaring that alike and equal mean the same thing. And it is both tragic and funny that an 8th grade class that exemplifies the tragedy of alike and equal mean the same thing, half of whom had no idea what the point of the story was. My friend Linda in the chat room says, we've already lost this generation. And yes, ma'am, you're correct. We have to wake up to what our public education system is doing to the future of this nation. I strongly recommend, ladies and gentlemen, that those of you who care about not outliving your country, go to your school board meetings, examine the syllabi for your students' classes, talk with their teachers, talk with your children, and encourage them to do anything they can to read, study, and explore beyond the fill-in-the-blank, word bank, teach-to-the-test classwork they are being given. I see what's happening because I am in, quote-unquote, the front lines. Bless the teacher who chose this story. She is a young teacher, the one that I talked about last week, who told me that when she was in college, her professors in her education courses told her that her radical ideas, otherwise known as conservatives, would give her plenty of trouble in public education, and that she would find herself totally alone in her viewpoints. And as we were talking together during a brief time when we did not have students, she expressed to me how glad she was to find out that she wasn't alone, and that many teachers felt the way she did about the purpose of education. Even though my friend Linda's view that we've lost this generation is very close to being accurate, there is still hope, because we still have young people who go into teaching because they believe that teaching is giving and sharing knowledge and helping students to become lifelong learners. And we, as parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, members of our communities, can and should do everything we can to support and encourage teachers like this. We cannot be the parent who calls up and complains about the F on a report card for a child who doesn't do his homework, doesn't study for tests, and acts up in class so he spends 2 out of every 8 days in school suspension. blaming the teacher for not teaching him right. We cannot be the parent who is so convinced that our angelic offspring needs only to sit in a classroom for 55 minutes and the magic teacher will forcibly or magically inject into his head knowledge and memory. We cannot be the parent who listens to their child scream, holler, beg, threaten to take a course for which they are not prepared in first year Spanish for high school credit so they can, quote, get it over with, unquote, in eighth grade, and so far have accumulated a grade point average of 23%, and demand that they continue in the course. And, oh yes, that's a quotation from real life, ladies and gentlemen. And we must not be the parent who agrees and says it's wonderful that their child who has failed sixth grade twice goes to a new school and is put in eighth grade classes because he's tall. And when given a worksheet graphing linear equations, cannot possibly do it because he doesn't know how to figure out how to add two numbers with different signs. We are just as responsible, ladies and gentlemen, for the pathetic state of our public education system as teachers, administrators, the Federal Department of Education, and students, because education begins at home. We cannot send five-year-olds to kindergarten who have never been taught that you don't take things from other people just because you want them and the other person has them. We do not send children through 8 years of school who cannot read so that they will feel good about themselves because they pass every year. We cannot demand that accommodations be made for our child with whatever disability of speech, language, physical, emotional, eating, breathing, sleeping, talking, walking, touching they have, that they are not required to learn anything while they're in class. We cannot create Kurt Vonnegut's 2081 America, ladies and gentlemen. And this is what we are trying to create. We are trying to tell our children that everybody is alike, that everybody must have the same degree of skill in everything, that everybody must be handicapped so that they don't make somebody else feel badly because they are smarter, prettier, stronger, more athletic, more talented, or more skillful. We have got to stop the everybody gets a trophy nonsense. The glimmer of hope is there. After the what's the point of the story, I led the class in a discussion of what was happening in 2081 America in Kurt Vonnegut's story. I asked them, if you lived in that time and in that America, would there be any football games or professional sports? Well, no. So I said, well, why not? Well, because somebody would have to win, and that would mean they were better than somebody else, so they couldn't do that. I said, yeah, probably. You're probably right about that. And I asked them, do you want to live in that America? Well, no. I don't want to wear a big bag of, you know, heavy stuff around my neck if I'm strong. I said, yeah, well, I feel the same way. I don't want to live in that either. And I asked them, what does equal mean? And several kids said, well, it means having the same rights. I said, yeah, that's one of its meanings. I said, well, does equal mean alike? And about half the class said yes, and about the other half said no. So I asked one of the ones who said yes, okay, why does it mean alike? And they couldn't tell me. And I asked one of the ones who said no, why does it not mean alike? And they said, because people aren't the same. They aren't all the same. Some people are smarter than somebody else, or some people are better football players, or, you know, people aren't all alike. And said that they mean the same things, nodding their heads, going, yeah, that's right. And so we talk about what being equal under God and the law at the beginning of the story, and about what the Constitution talks about, because these eighth graders are also in civics. And they studied, supposedly, the Constitution in the first 9 weeks of school. And I explained that being equal under the law meant that nobody, no matter how intelligent or rich or talented or beautiful or whatever they were, could be allowed to go out and kill people just because they were prettier than somebody else, and that gave them the right to go kill ugly people or other pretty people. And they all understood that. So, there is hope, ladies and gentlemen. Our kids have not been totally dumbed down to total cottage cheese between their ears. Not yet. And I'm not the only one out there who is doing everything he or she can to remove the cottage cheese and replace it with brain cells that function. But all of us involved in education, public and private, need parents and concerned adults to stand up and say, stop. We need to back away from the false compassion of everybody gets a trophy and gee, don't you feel good about yourself. We do not need to become eugenicists who shove the children who can't keep up out into the cold winter storms with no coat and hope they die. We do not need to be Spartan mothers who expose the stupid on the hillside, or the Hawaiian tribes who throw the malformed baby over the cliff. We do not need Agenda 21 thinking, which is exactly what is going on. Kurt Vonnegut painted a picture of everybody is equal means everybody is alike. His short story, Harrison Bergeron, is very much akin to the novel The Giver, I've also talked about on this show, which does pretty much the same thing. But instead of handicapping to prevent the use of brain, it makes it socially unacceptable to do, say, or think what is considered to be appropriate for your particular age or job. The Giver eliminates the family as birth parents and children produced at their will rather than society's. Parents are a wife and husband who are given one male and one female child from the general nurseries, which are produced by the mothers, to be nurtured by a set of parents to whom they are not directly related genetically at all, so as to eliminate the possibility that one might think about something or feel something outside what is considered to be socially correct. Children approaching puberty take medicine as part of their daily routine so that their hormonal balances will be artificially suppressed and they cannot go into puberty. Children are basically sequestered by age. Every child at a certain age receives a bicycle. Every child at a certain age gets a kind of jacket that they can button up the front when they get old enough to have thoroughly absorbed the idea that the community and the village take care of everyone by jackets they can't button without someone else's help. These two authors, although very different in their approach, recognize the danger in the fallacy of equality and similarity being considered synonymous. The other glimmer of hope is that both these pieces of writing are being given to our kids to read and think about. So there are still teachers out there who want their students to actually think. Unfortunately, because of the way in which our educational mandates for the federal government are implemented in order for our state governments to get the federal funds that pays teachers' salaries, buys computers, and new schools, the method of teaching is fill in the blank from a word bank and copy directly from the text to answer questions. Not all teachers do this 100% of the time. I know and work with several who are quietly subversive, like a civics teacher I substituted for, who doesn't let them copy the definition of a word directly from the textbook. They have to put it in their own words. And oh Lord, is it sad to watch them struggle to do it. It's also very, very sad to teach a Spanish class in which one of the students complains when given a new verb to learn to conjugate that she just doesn't get. And when I ask, what is it you don't get? The answer is, all of it. And I said, okay, do you know what a verb is? And the response was, kind of. My friend Linda says I must be pulling my hair out by now with Spanish. Not quite yet. I actually do have a few in there who know what a verb is and understand how to conjugate one. The student who did the I just don't get it told me basically that the reason she didn't get it and the reason that I wasn't teaching right or that her teachers weren't teaching right is that she has trouble remembering things. And my response was, I'm very sorry. But if you're going to pass this course, you have to learn to remember things. This is the student who begged, pleaded, screamed through tantrums until she could get this course over with. The one with the 23% average. Who also told me that she has a tutor, but she still doesn't get it, and why couldn't I tutor her? And I explained that, no, I can't because I'm working all day. Well, why can't you tutor me during my peak periods? Well, because I'm teaching the other Spanish class during those periods. And that if I tutored her after school, which I would not be able to do because I am teaching the class, and that would be a conflict of interest, I'm a professional tutor, and I expect to be paid. And her response was, well, gee, I don't want to have to pay for it. I'm sure her family voted Democratic in the last election. And the fruit does not fall from the tree. But she is not the majority, ladies and gentlemen. Not yet. Not among the kids. It's about maybe 5% less than the election results would indicate. Okay? Because even some of the voting parents who were so anxious to see another term for our current president actually managed to produce children who appear to be able to learn to think. So that gives me hope as well. But the influence of the schools and the methods that are used in them and the philosophy behind the way things are taught and what is taught has way more impact by the time the child is in fifth or sixth grade than the family does. Because when you look at the time the kids spend in school compared with the time they spend with their parents during the school year, the schools win hands down. If you don't take the time, ladies and gentlemen, sit down with your kids and go over what they're learning, read their textbooks, look at their homework assignments, don't be intimidated by the fact that you're saying to yourself, oh, gee, I was never any good in math. I can't help them. Yes, you can. You can learn with them. My friend Linda says that ages 1 through 10 is when kids are thirsty for knowledge, unless the system beats it out of them. And she's right. You are critical to your children's education during those years. Those first 5 years of school, first through fifth grade, before they hit middle school, before they start saying, you don't know anything, only my friends do, you have got to be a living, breathing, constant presence in your child's education. And I'm sorry that this places a burden on a lot of parents. It places a huge burden on single mothers or single fathers raising children alone. When you have to rely on daycare or family to be there for them when they come home from school, and you get home 2 hours later and you're beat, and you've got all of the household chores and all of the monetary considerations and all of the worries about work and all of the chores you have to do to keep the family going. Yes, it places a great burden on you. And I wish there were a way that we could ease that burden for you. But until and unless we trust our public education system as much as we trust ourselves in teaching our children, the burden unfortunately falls on us. Yes, it's a rather bleak picture, but it is the truth, ladies and gentlemen. You cannot trust your children to be raised by the state. And if you are trusting the public education system to teach them values and ethics and a reverence for and interest in the acquiring of knowledge and the skills and talents they need to be competitive, yes, that evil word, in life, the workplace, in their own personal growth, you are doomed to disappointment. Because the public education system was never intended to do those things. It was never intended to replace you. It was not supposed to be, in the minds of our founders, a re-education indoctrination camp that relieved you of the duty of teaching your children everything they needed to know in order to be learners. Public education today does not teach your children to learn or to want to learn. He teaches them to pass tests and get good grades so they can go to college and make a lot of money. It teaches them a big, fat lie. It teaches them that grades are given to them because the teacher likes them. It teaches them, if they have difficulty with learning in any way, that the world is going to bend to their needs and accommodate their difficulties and make sure that they get a trophy for participation, even if they cannot play the game. My friend Linda says in Obamaland there are no jobs and no money. And she's right. And that will be the perfect environment for what our public schools are trying to turn out. People who believe in the government's Julia, who has to turn to the state in every stage of her life to succeed in living. People who cannot stand on their own two feet because they are either too weak-willed or too weak-minded to accept the fact that living is risk. That you don't always make the right decision and that you don't get a do-over when you make the wrong one. When you make a wrong decision or a bad choice, there are consequences you have to deal with in order to clear the board so you can make a better choice. But progressive educational theory does not permit you to fail. It does not allow you to make bad choices because you would feel bad. You can't see a pretty face because you'll feel like something the cat drug in, to quote Kurt Vonnegut. I was a very, very lucky, ladies and gentlemen, and I still am. I had the ability to succeed academically. I had parents who did not set the bar too low, who had high expectations, and who expressed to me their disappointment when I did not meet them. Their expectations were not impossibly high. Their expectations were rational and logical, given that they knew I could achieve. And they were not about to allow me to slide and do a half-baked job simply because something came easily to me. I was lucky in the schools I attended, expected me to achieve to my full potential. And when I didn't, I saw and heard the consequences. I was lucky in that I was never told that somebody else owed me a living or a grade or success. My generation grew up as the children of the greatest generation. We grew up the sons and daughters of men and women who put their lives on the line to save the entire world from evil incarnate. And they were eager to do so. My own father came home from the recruiting office for the Army Air Corps after he had been told that his elbow, which had been broken when he was 13, and the consequences of being unable to straighten out his left arm all the way would bar him from military service, even though he had the highest recorded score of all of the recruits who came into the station in his town on the intelligence and aptitude test. He came home and he cried because he believed that it was his duty and his privilege to risk his life in the defense of his country. I had him to look up to, ladies and gentlemen. And I did. I had a mother who took on the care of her mother, who was undergoing, at age 62, treatment for cervical cancer in 1957, when the only treatment was heavy radiation. And after about 12 treatments of that, her mother was unable to go up and down stairs without assistance and unable to control her digestive tract and bowels, so that often she couldn't make it to the bathroom in time. And it devastated her. She had raised two daughters alone from the time they were 15 to 10, with nothing more than eighth grade education and doing housework, literally scrubbing floors in order to pay their tuition to Catholic school, because it was the best education she could give them. And my mother took on care of her mother, with a husband and two small children she also had to care for. And she didn't complain, and she didn't whine, and she didn't cry. She pushed herself nearly to exhaustion, but she was always there for all of us. And I had her to look up to. Neither of my parents went to the government for assistance. Neither of them protested or called their congressman or complained about how unfair it was that they didn't get to do what they wanted to do. And it was somebody's fault and somebody had to pay. They just did what they had to do. And they had their downtimes, and they had their arguments, and they had their difficulties, and they had quarreling kids, and a tired old woman who was in constant pain, who sometimes couldn't hold back the tears. And my mother belonged to a church group and was a Girl Scout leader, in addition to all of that. And my dad did a radio show for the Junior Chamber of Commerce in our hometown. And when he was called in to fill in for another host with no guest and no idea, did a 15-minute radio show totally without a script and got fan letters and calls that it was the best show they'd ever heard on the radio station. And that was working full-time and caring for his mother-in-law and trying to keep his wife from going crazy and his daughters from slitting each other's throats. And neither one of them ever looked to anybody but themselves and each other to get through it. They were heroes, ladies and gentlemen. Even though neither of them got a Silver Star or a Congressional Medal of Honor or the Navy Cross or any of the physical rewards for battlefield combat, what they did get was three daughters who grew up to be functioning, intelligent, responsible, productive adults. And two grandchildren who loved both of them dearly and miss them to this day, even though my father has been dead for 7 years and my mother for approximately 15. I was lucky because I had this kind of education in my own living room. How many of our children today are getting this kind of education at home? Lord knows I do not wish troubles on any family. I would love to have everyone's life be happy and comfortable and smooth and easy and pleasant with no challenges and no failures and no discomforts, no illness, no unemployment, no storms, no hurricanes, no tornadoes, no floods. But that does not happen. That is not, as my friend Linda says, reality. Government, the state, cannot make your life risk-free. No matter how many regulations, I think it's 68 per day in the first 5 days after the election from our current president, no matter how many regulations they put in place, no matter how many executive orders to create a civilian homeland security army of brown shirts, no matter how many bars they put in place of individual achievement, no matter how much they try to make everybody alike in our public schools, government cannot make reality into utopia. And teaching our children that it can is evil. Oh yeah, the word that nobody wants to say. Because there is no good or evil, there's only different. Well, I hate to tell my progressive and liberal friends, there is such a thing as evil. Sorry. It's not just different. I'm sorry to tell you that when somebody tells me that their religious leader tells them that their duty is to shoot me because I don't believe in their religion, that's not just different, that's evil. I'm sorry to tell my liberal progressive friends when government officials who are elected by my vote give my money to companies that are an incredible risk and are likely to go bankrupt, and they know it. That's not just different, that's evil. And I'm sorry to tell my progressive liberal friends that when a president writes an order to his Justice Department that they are not to enforce laws which have been passed by Congress, that's not just different, ladies and gentlemen, that's evil. Now, I am not calling people evil. Right? I am calling actions of people evil. And it is in our actions that we differentiate from good and evil. I think my friend Linda's on the line, so hang on and we'll see what she has to say tonight. Hi, Linda.
Oh, hi, Miss Carrie.
Hello,
thanks
can you hear me?
Taking the call. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Are you me?
I sure can.
Okay, great. Yeah,
yep.
It's all the. I love the story, by the way. But the sad part was the very top of the show, that the kids didn't understand, or some didn't understand, but some got it. There's some hope.
Yes.
The part about understanding competition, my God, the people that came through Ellis Island sure as heck understood it. That's all they knew was hard work. My gosh.
They were eager to have the chance to compete.
Oh, my Lord. Just to put the bread on the table, they had families already, you know, many of them brought their families that they could, you know, those that could come in.
Right.
Oh, and they, my God. And but there's a little ray of hope when I see, you know, because I'm into the dancing world because I enjoy it so much. And I'm watching the young ones, and I mean, these kids are like 16, 17, 18 years old. And when they do the So You Think You Can Dance, boy, they're competitive. And if they make it, they get voted off. It's that simple. They go home, you know, and they know they got to work hard. They absolutely know that for a fact. And next year they come back, some of them try it again.
Exactly.
You know, that's the beauty of that segment. Now, they may not know the first thing about the Declaration of Independence, but at least they understand competition. At least they have that part.
Yeah, and they understand that you have to work at something to get better at it.
Oh, my God. They put in days and hours and sweat. And I know. I used to do it. Oh, God. And the injuries and the heartbreak. And the, oh, I mean,
so do people who get to the top of American Idol or the X Factor. All of them understand that if they're going to be any good, they've got, at least got to practice. But I've got a batch of eighth graders in that science class. Spanish class, who think that they can learn Spanish if they never look at it between classes.
I know. It's crazy. I don't understand the concept. It's so foreign to both of us, you know, because we come from another time. And, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Boy, my dad would have had a cow if I came home with a C.
Of course.
He knew I was smart enough.
My father nearly had a heart attack when I brought home a D in Algebra 1. And, you know, I think he would have, you know, drowned me very happily until he found out that the reason I got it was because they'd screwed up and put me in an advanced class. They were already through Algebra 1, and I'd never even seen this stuff before. I just thought I was stupid. But, you know, we mended fences between us, and he helped me, and I did manage to finish the course with a C, which, when you stop to consider that I was a half a year behind to begin with, wasn't too bad. So, anyhow.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, it's funny because there was the one of the times I went overseas and all of us kids were sitting on the floor and we had been through like 5 or 6 weeks, I mean, the most grueling rehearsals in your life. And so we were filling out our pieces and so my friend Dennis, who was an absolute cut-up, he says, there's a list, and he says, okay, name, address, and he says, occupation. He goes, masochist. That was the ongoing joke. Yeah.
One of the reasons I was never interested in ballet is because I'm not a masochist. You know, I don't want my feet bleeding after every practice session. And if you go for those cotton picking block toe shoes, that's what happens.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah. But doggone it, if I was watching Liberty Treehouse today and they had, it was on Glenn Beck's Blaze TV, the dish. And they had a segment with a gentleman who was a music star, I think a composer, singer, arts, whatever.
Right.
And the hostess was talking about the difference following your dream. And he came up and he was talking about, he said, there's a difference between a dream and this, gee, I want to be that. A dream is knowing you're going to have to work at it and laying out to try to get there. Instead of just wishful thinking, oh, gee, I wish I'd be a baseball player. You have a dream. You're out there with that baseball, and you're thrown until your arm hurts to your accuracy. You're not just standing there saying, I wish I could be a baseball player, and waiting for a scout to come by and say, guess what, you get to join the New York Yankees, which is unfortunate.
Right.
That second one is the attitude of so many of our school kids, because this is the atmosphere that they're getting in the classroom, particularly in the classes. What was intended to try to give compassionate, feel-good, touchy-feely to the special ed kids has wound up dumbing down anybody who's in the same class with them.
Exactly. Oh.
That's so sad. Because both sides get hurt. It doesn't mm-hmm. what it was intended for the kids who were feeling bad because they couldn't compete. It just makes them feel worse and turns them into little monsters in the classroom. I have said over and over and over again that the percentage of kids who wind up in my ISS room who are sped far outweighs those who are not special education students.
Right. Wow.
And, you know, anybody with any degree of understanding of how kids interact with each other and how people interact with each other, mm-hmm. you're not going to get children who haven't gotten the life experience yet to understand empathy, to mm-hmm. empathize with somebody that they see as really dumb. They're going to laugh and make fun. They always do.
Well, not all of them, because, you know, we would have had our hinds tanned when we got home.
Exactly.
But if the word got out.
They're always the ones who do. They're always ones who go home and tell the story about the dumb kid, and the parents laugh at it. Don't pan that.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, there are always going to be people like that. And I'm sorry, short of, you know, being able to envision the future of what this child's going to turn out to be and killing it before it gets there, which is eugenics and Agenda 21,
mm-hmm.
you're not
right.
going to change it. And unfortunately, most people don't want to see this. They don't want to see past the, oh, goody, I have a phone. They do not understand that that Obama phone is two steps before they quietly put you in a place where you die and don't bother anybody anymore.
Or a FEMA camp
you're not permitted to reproduce, and there's nobody to take care of you when the government falls apart and the checks don't come anymore.
Oh, and then we'll have the UN mm-hmm. troops on the street to keep everybody rounded up, because that's exactly what's going to happen. And when this fiscal cliff hits, that's why I have to keep buying more ammo. Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord, help me. But, yeah, I'm trying to wake people up.
We'll have Der Fuhrer, or we'll have Der Fuhrer.
Yeah, that's what we have already. Oh, yeah, that's what he wants to be. Tuesday. He's such a schmendrick.
I know it.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad.
I get frustrated. You know that, Linda. And God bless David. He lets me rant and rave and so on and so forth. And, you know, I am lucky in him as well. He just fell asleep, poor lamb. So I don't blame him, because he kind of heard the show before I gave it. No, he didn't fall asleep. He just talked to me. Okay, so.
Awesome.
But I had read him the story, Harrison Bergeron, when
uh-huh.
I came the other day, when I knew that I was going to use it as my topic tonight, because it was so apropos on so many levels. It is a practical description of what the end result could be of the progressive ideology for education. It also was a hopeful sign, because the teacher gave it to read.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some kids in the class who actually thought about it. Now, for the class, where I had to read it out loud, because they couldn't read it to themselves, most of them, it took a little while, yeah. But that was a collaborative class.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens a lot. And a lot of the times when I'm substituting, I'm pulled away to take a group of special ed students somewhere and read a test out loud to them, because they can't read it themselves.
My goodness. Yeah, this is the failure of what this progressive movement has done. It's horrendous.
Yeah.
I cannot even – this is the part that – well, it doesn't surprise me now, since I saw the outcome of the election, when I keep wondering, why are the parents accepting this? Well, they're accepting the beanie bags around their necks, just like the story. I mean, that's what's going on. They're marching right to it. It's unbelievable.
And as I said on, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I put forth my crazy radical ideas for reforming the education system. and it's what we have to do, which basically was the way the educational system used to work and the way the educational system was intended to work at the time our founding fathers were promoting the idea of public education.
Mm-hmm.
They did not want everybody gets a trophy, everybody gets an A, everybody goes to college. No, they didn't want that. All they wanted was access to education beyond learning how to read, write, and cipher for those who had the ability to learn, but not the means wherewith people or family wealth to get it. That
exactly.
It's supposed to be a step up in meritocracy. It is why
sure.
people came here and were thrilled when their kids were public school. They came from Poland and Lithuania and Czechoslovakia
mm-hmm.
and Finland and Latvia and Africa and Greece and Italy and France and everywhere else they came from. My kid can go to school and he can become a doctor, even though I am not of noble blood.
Exactly. Oh, of course.
What public school was supposed to do. It wasn't supposed to make everybody a frickin' doctor. It was a kid who had the talent and the skill and the drive. Give him a chance. Give him an open door to prove he could be educated.
Right.
Don't
yeah.
make him feel
I mean,
himself because he's
the poor
stupid.
Founders. If they were thrust back here right now, they would think they landed on Mars.
You know, it's amazing to me that the cemeteries in Boston that date back to the Revolution aren't suffering earthquakes every day from all of them rolling over in their graves.
I absolutely agree. Oh, my gosh. I think they're quietly weeping in heaven.
I'm beginning to think that our earthquake here in Virginia wasn't generated in Mineral. It was generated in and around Charlottesville. It was Jefferson rolling over and saying, oh, my God, what are you people doing?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness.
Because... that may be far-fetched, but Lord knows I have a very embracing and flexible mind, and it wouldn't surprise me if that were the case, because so much of what we're doing to our kids, and I say over and over and over again, there are really, really good teachers out there, and God
mm-hmm.
bless them. Some of them stick with it past the five-year mark when most of them get burned out and say, the heck with this, I'm going to go teach college.
Right.
Okay, or I'm going to
yeah.
go to business, I'm going to get in the military, or I'm going to go sit in the beach in the Fiji Islands and eat coconuts because I'm too crazy to do anything else. There
yeah.
are ones to control the humanity long enough to continue doing the job. And there are ones that are coming out of schools, like the teacher of that eighth grade class, who are not buying the liberal education professor's garbage.
Right.
And who are trying to make a difference. And who are thrilled to find out that there are other ones out there who are doing the same thing. And one of my other lucky breaks in Virginia, a right to work state. The teachers' unions don't control us.
Good. Yeah. Now, is there a way to turn this back, community by community? And
yeah.
In other words, to actually go... try to get a small charter school or a small three-room schoolhouse or something and
yep.
along the lines which what you were speaking of with the computers and the moderators and people
mm-hmm.
who actually know certain subjects and would be right at hand for any questions. That would be like a mentoring rather than just this ridiculous situation they have now.
We have got to, if we are going to aim at trying to give everybody an equal opportunity, equal opportunity to learn, we're going to have to totally revamp the traditional classroom model and use the technology that we've got. We have a better shot now of giving kids that equal opportunity, even than they had when the immigrants were flooding to this nation, because we can allow them to work at their own pace. We can let the kids who can go ahead and by leaps and bounds do so. And without holding them back, we can also take the time to go over the stuff that isn't getting through to the kid who might get it the third time but can't keep up with the fast ones in a classroom.
One of the first things they're going to have to address is mm-hmm. from age five through or five or six, let's start with,
yep.
having a completely revamped situation from that age to, say, like age eight, a very huge emphasis on phonetic reading and comprehension.
Yes, ma'am.
They're going to have to do that because if they, you can put a computer in front of them, if they can't they can't read the words and know
yep.
what a dictionary is, what good is all of it? You know?
Yes.
You can't
get
to higher learning.
And even there, Linda, we've got a shot to help the ones who simply cannot process the written word. And there are people who can't. We have the technology with the voice activated, you say it and it shows it on the screen, okay? We also have books on tape. We have CDs of textbooks. They can learn the information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we can teach them what they need to know to be able to function in society.
Right.
And to be able to earn a living and be as independent as their other skills and abilities can allow them to be.
Sure.
We can accommodate them as well as make sure that those who can learn to read do.
Oh, my gosh. And then, because you have, as you say, you've got every single level to deal with. Everybody
That's
is
right.
not cookie cutter. Everybody's not, you know, comes out of the chute the same. They don't. Some people have higher IQs from birth. They're just smart.
And
some kids
exactly.
are average. And so the ones who are what we call accelerated or, you know, who really are bright, my God, don't hold them back.
Right. And
challenge
don't
them.
Force, and don't force the ones like the kid that I was a one-on-one aide for who can't process the normal speed of spoken English. Don't have him sitting there constantly saying, what did he say? What did he say? What did he say?
Yeah. Right.
You put that kid with the computer, and it might take him 7 hours to do the English test, but he got a 580 out of 600 on it.
Sure.
So,
I agree.
We have the technology we can rebuild. Yeah, $6 million man. But we can't do it with traditional classroom teach to the middle. When I was working as a professional tutor in my husband's mother's tutoring firm, she would not hire teachers to be tutors for very good reasons. When you tutor someone, you have to tailor your presentation to that person's learning speed, strengths, and weaknesses. That's what tutors do.
Right.
A classroom teacher has to teach to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He or she has to meet chronological goals, covering material on a chronological basis to meet state standards that are chronologically based. You cannot do that and individually teach every child. But with a different model, like Carpe Diem schools, like using computers, like not this stupid nonsense of, mainstreaming and integration and crap like that, you can give each and every child the opportunity to learn at his or own pace. And you can
which
a kid who...
Which ultimately results almost in individual teaching.
Yes, it does. We could do it. We could, in effect, create what the wealthy got at the time of our founding fathers. Their own private tutor who lived in the house and taught all the kids in the family.
Well, you know, it's really a shame that you're not as well healed as we would like you to be. That way you could start your own school, you know.
Yeah.
And in a free market, that would be just amazing. You'd probably make a fortune.
Very likely. I probably would. If I had the backing or the investors to do it the way that Carpe Diem does, to follow their model and set up
there.
Yeah, and that's the key. You asked before, what can we do? We can look for and support and recommend and advertise for in our talking places like Carpe Diem. We can get
that's the way it's got to start with the grassroots. I know that
on networks like Fox or on Glenn Beck's The Blaze, which reach millions of people who are like minded.
Mm-hmm.
And who believe in principles on which we were founded, which had nothing whatsoever to do with Vonnegut 2081, everybody's the same. They had to do with everybody different, and isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, so, you know, in fact, Glenn's working, he's already got the book out, the Agenda 21, by him and his staff.
Which I'm get plaques to those ads. Which I figured when I saw the on the Blaze TV, he's been running the Agenda 21 is coming with a nice sweet woman's voice with the British accent. All the old people saying, I have lived a good life. Come and kill me so there's no room for you. kind of thing. And I figured, because I know, I believe I know his thinking patterns and his ethics well enough to know that there's no way he'd accept money to advertise Agenda 21 in a positive way. So, you know, and so many people were just, they'd gotten so used to thinking that way.
Yes, absolutely.
That they, you canceled their subscriptions and wrote them angry emails. Because even the ones who follow Glenn and who think the way he does and who like his ideas have been dumped down.
Right. So what I'm trying to do, once I get a little bit more energy back after this crazy campaign we went through, I have tons of material, and I plan to get more to get out to the public. To, you know, I have a piece of work that came from my friend Ken, who's been fighting against this as well. Got to get it to Bill Strong, so he's waiting for that because he can use it in his community, which speaks to the city councils and the planners. So that you can utilize it anywhere. It doesn't matter. Just because the word VISTA is in there doesn't, you know, you substitute your own town. It was, anyway, so we're doing the best we can, and I will be going back to the city councils and fighting against it here in my city, also educating others. I have handouts for people. I haven't had a chance to go to an action meeting, but, boy, I mean, there's a lot of folks who are open to the idea to learn. Many are not because they're so progressive and, you know, their Obama box, but it's okay. If I'm allowed to speak, at least I can maybe catch five out of the whole group.
That's all you can do. And you're being a teacher, darling, just like I am. You never can be guaranteed that you're going to reach everybody in the class. It's not possible. You'll have the bored, the disinterested, the stupid, the thinking about sleeping with their mistress the next night, ones who aren't paying any attention. But you're going to get some of them. I mean, you know, the general Petraeuses. And that is so wicked.
I got
that's
that.
Another
yeah.
topic. Yeah. I thought you would, sweetie. You're not exactly slow on the uptake, thank God. But you too, as I have said before, every single one of us is a teacher in one way or another. We all are. We teach by the way we live and by what we do and how we interact with one another. We have to be the kind of role models that your parents were for you and mine were for me, for the younger generation. We have to, because otherwise...
Mary, I'm going after every age group I can get.
Good girl.
I don't care if they're
good
20
girl.
Or they're 60. I don't care. I want them
Amen.
All. Because
good
there's
girl.
A lot of people out here who are between 40 and 70 who definitely need some educating on this Agenda 21, and they need it real fast.
Yeah,
so.
They do. Well, the one good thing I mentioned on, I think it was in the chat room on one of the shows or something, I forget where I was talking about it, but our local Tea Party basically got the Board of Supervisors to ditch Agenda 21-oriented changes they were going to make to the five-year plan for the county. So it's happening here, too.
We are.
People who know what Agenda 21 means are out there on the stump talking and going to their city councils and their county commissions and everybody
Thank
and saying, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. As I have said before, sometimes I have to present, like I did tonight, a pessimistic view of what's happening because too many people want to feel good. They want to, oh, everything's fine. We're going to have a wonderful time. Everything's going to be good. All we have to do is sit back and wait, and it'll get better.
Oh, no.
Well,
oh, no.
No. Sometimes you have to hold up a really horrible picture and say, is this what you want?
Exactly. Well, that's why I put on the Patriot Family site in my blog my predictions for 2013. I've sent it to everybody here in California.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks. People in California, all my Tea Party friends, and I even sent it to a couple libtard friends. And, I mean, because I'm done playing, you know, softball with people. Can't do it anymore.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm going to be showing people, is this the kind of darkness you want to go through? I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday on my show when Ron called in. I said, my God, does it take an absolute genius to put the dots together? Of course, the people that I'm going to be speaking to wouldn't know Engels from Hess from Eichmann. But, you know, this is what I'm saying. Karl Marx, who were the two people who took it to the extreme? Lenin and Stalin. They killed 30 million people in that group with the brute force. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it was Mussolini or Adolf Hitler or any of them, or Pol Pot or Mao Zedong. They all drove it down to the darkness. To the scorched earth darkness. This is what you get when you go there. They don't understand it.
No,
but
they
I'm
going
to start to, if I have to connect the dots for people and draw them a picture, then by God, I'm going to do it.
Uh-huh.
They may hate
and
me.
They, yep. And they do not. I really enjoyed Glenn's interview tonight on his show on the Blaze TV with Napolitano.
Love him.
Bless him. And it was, you know, Teddy and Woodrow. Oh, my God. And if what really got me was Hillary Clinton saying that one of her heroes is Margaret Sanger.
Oh
my God.
Well, yeah,
I've
labeled her a she-devil. I know who she is. Yeah, she's a Fabian socialist. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Of course
she is.
Oh,
yeah.
And
right out of that group.
Unfortunately, nobody wants to know the underside of all these pretty words. David was watching Obama's press conference.
That's enough to make anyone. You have to have a bar. You have to have an air sick bag next to you. You just have to.
Exactly. I refused to even look at it when he showed clips. And David said he watched it because he knew I wouldn't let him when I was home.
Oh, I know. It's horrendous.
He wouldn't have tried because he doesn't want to watch me throw up for 4 hours. But anyhow, the dog and pony show, the happy little, oh, doesn't this sound wonderful? It's all nothing but pathological liar showing his talents. But boy, doesn't he make it sound good. And this is the problem when you get an orator instead of a statesman.
Oh, my gosh. This guy's not even a politician. He's just...
No.
His actions and deeds are bordering evil. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
I'm going to let you wind it up, but thanks so much for taking my call and letting me vent. But it was a wonderful show tonight.
Any time, your heart. I'm glad
wonderful
you enjoyed
show.
I'm glad you enjoyed the story. I kind of like reading out loud. That's why David likes me to read books to it.
Good for you, because you do it so well. You're a born teacher.
Am.
You really are.
Thank you. I am
okay, sweetie. God bless.
You too, sweetie. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Linda from California, that California conservative, that bird of image, is out there teaching herself. She's educating people in her town about the horrors in store for us if we do not pay attention to the progressive reality in the form of Agenda 21 and what our government, under the guise of making everybody feel good, is setting us up for. We have got to wake up and smell the coffee. We have got to accept the fact that life is a risk, and that the only way we can take that risk is if we can rely on ourselves and try to be better tomorrow than we were today without government assistance in giving us what we want. We have to remember that want and have are not synonymous, and that we have to grow up from the kindergartner who snatches his playmate's cupcake because he wants it and his playmate is smaller and he can take it away. We have got to recognize that the state is not the answer to our own deficiencies. We are. I hope you'll join us every night of the week here on Blog Talk Radio for our Patriot Family Radio shows. Every Sunday, Frank is Fed Up. Every Monday, Constitution Hour. Tuesday, Patriot Family Chat. Every Wednesday, From the Left Coast with Linda Stokes. Every Thursday, Patriot Education. Every Friday, Foreclosure Health. Every Saturday, Breaking the Illusion. And come and visit us at www.patriotfamilies.com. Tell us your thoughts, your opinions, and your concerns, and what you're doing to live up to the ideals that our founding fathers put into our Constitution and expressed in our Declaration of Independence, and what our greatest generation fought and died to preserve and make available to the rest of the world. Thank you for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you'll join us every Thursday. Next Thursday, hopefully, we'll have a guest hostess because I will be celebrating Thanksgiving with my husband and my grandchildren. So between now and then, I hope all your Thanksgiving preparations go smoothly and joyfully, and that you have a beautiful holiday, and that you have much to be thankful for, including the tough times, because they are what give us our backbones and our ability to stand up and speak what we believe. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. I'll see you in the next for Patriot Education. Have a great evening. Bye.